So look, if you want to grow your wealth, your income, and increase the amount of time off, then these are the shortcuts that can help. Welcome to the Wealth Creation Podcast. Hey, and welcome everybody. It's Dan and Phil. Welcome. Hey, Phil, how are you doing?
Hey, good, Dan. Thanks. And hello, everybody.
Good stuff. So let me just introduce Phil. Phil runs a company called Landlord Defence League, and they look after landlords who sometimes, let's just say, get themselves into a little bit of bother with the local council. And in today's session, I want to get the lowdown on what we call mini-HMOs, I call them, but the mini-HMOs. So it's not the full-on HMO with the full licensing, but it's three or four people sharing a unit. So welcome, Phil. How are you doing today?
Very good, thanks, Dan. And looking forward to trying to shed a little bit of light on the mini-HMO story, because there's an awful lot of confusion out there.
So, and the confusion is usually me, by the way. So just before we came live, I was telling Phil about, I guess, you know, I'm probably his worst and best customer, potentially, with the amount of legislation that I just kind of ignore or don't understand. But that's why we have experts in the field, which is Phil. So just tell me what a mini-HMO is, or a mini-HMO, first of all. Let's just get those criteria down.
So a lot of people don't think that anything less than five sharers is an HMO. And it's a sort of historic misunderstanding. In 2004, the then government brought in a new housing act, and that defined any property with three or more people from two or more households, is how they put it in legalese. That is, in law, an HMO. And the minute you've got an HMO, oh, there's all sorts of laws and regulations that you've got to comply with on pain of criminal prosecution. So what used to be a three or four person shared house, and dead simple, it was just the same as an ordinary house, and all the ordinary regulations applied. And then, of course, planning and licensing became two different things, but we'll ignore planning for the moment, and we'll stick with Housing Act stuff. So right back from 2004, most of us have been breaking the law because we haven't been doing the right stuff in our three and four person shared houses, or what people now call mini-HMOs.
Yeah.
So something that we need to drill down into a bit, I think.
Okay. And also a little bit of clarification here. So for example, and correct me if I'm wrong, which I often am, but I ignore, three unrelated people. So if you've got Bob and Jill and they live together in a partnership, they're not married and they're not engaged or whatever, right? They're just a girlfriend and boyfriend, and then they get a lodger. That's now three unrelated people. So technically it's a HMO?
It's definitely an HMO. It's two households, because Bill and Jenny, or whatever they're called, because they're cohabiting.
Yeah.
So, interestingly, the
cohabiting, you don't have to be engaged, you don't have to be married, not a civil partnership, you just have to be officially cohabit, like there's nothing to sign, obviously.
It's called sexual union.
Right, okay, got it, okay, cool.
Yeah, so that could be two girls, two boys, one of each, whatever.
Yep.
But the household, if you like, as it's defined in law, is either sharing blood, i.e. their family, in the conventional sense, or sexual union.
Yeah.
So Bill and Mary and a child is one household.
Yeah.
Yeah. Introduce a friend, and you've now got two households, and you've actually got four people there. But let's say it's just Bill and Mary, and their mate moves in because he's just had a split up with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
They've just turned your buy-to-let or your single-let into an HMO. And now you've got to do all sorts of things with fire regulations. We'll come on to that.
So to clarify, now it's a HMO. So you've got two people in a union, and then they invite their friend along to stay because he's broke up. The household or the property now moves into HMO level regulations, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Three people. Look at it another way. Three people where they're not all related.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? If just one of them is not related to the others, you've got an HMO on your hands.
Wowzers. Okay. So then bare minimum requirements on that level of HMO?
Right. Well, first of all, you come under the management of houses in multiple occupation, brackets England, regulations 2006, otherwise known as the HMO management regs. So they kick in when you get to three people. And they put all sorts of requirements on you as a landlord, from displaying your manager's details, fire precautions, mold and damp, all that sort of stuff, maintaining water and drainage, maintaining a gas and electric supply, maintaining the common parts, maintaining living rooms, and rubbish and recycling. All of that lot. And not doing any of those is a criminal offence.
Okay. Now, some of those are what you'd have to do with a normal buy-to-let. So you've got an apartment, Bill and Bob live in that apartment, and you still have to do stuff like, you know, provide electricity and supply and a place to put your waste and all that kind of thing. Yeah. But over and above that on HMOs, so I think more specifically, I'm thinking fire doors, smoke alarms, fire alarms. And now, so can you clarify what you need for three or four unrelated people living in a minimo with regards to specifically fire doors, smoke alarms, and fire alarms?
Yeah, sure. Let me just first say, though, on the management regulations, the big difference is how prosecutable you are and how liable you are to fines, because the council can slap you with 30 grand fines on any of these things anytime they like.
And it's multiple 30 grand fines, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we often see people with 70, 80, 100 grand fines. You know, we had one guy on a property up in Northampton. I mean, it was a bit of a crappy HMO. But they hit him with 115 grand of fines on a 220k worth property.
That's crazy.
We managed to get it down to 50, I think, in the end, but it's still massive chunk of dosh. Massive.
That's life changing.
Yeah. So let's go back to fire, because that's probably the most important thing and the thing that most landlords are getting caught out on.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with fire alarms. Now, lots of people probably have what they've just discovered this minute are HMOs with perhaps just a couple of battery fire alarms in.
Yeah.
Right. Number one, battery fire alarms are out. They are not permitted in an HMO.
Yeah.
We have to have mains powered, interlinked smoke and heat fire alarms. Okay.
Okay.
Now, the recommendations for that changed in 2019 with a thing called, and I hope you're all taking notes, the British Standard 5839-6.
Okay.
Which none of you have read because it's 250 quid a copy. No, they go out of their way to make this stuff difficult. They really do.
That's where the money is.
Yeah. But what it means in essence is, if you've got an HMO of any description now, the very least you need is what's called grade D1 smoke and heat fire alarms. They've got to be mains powered.
Yeah.
They have to be interlinked, so that one being detecting smoke or a heat sets off all the sounders right throughout the building. And they can be interlinked either by wiring or, thankfully, by wireless, which means that it's a lot easier to fit them, because you can actually get your Sparky to fit them fairly close to a light fitting and pick up a main supply at the back of the ceiling rows. So we've now got to have these. You used to be able to get away with just the hallways and the landings. Not anymore. The new BS says all risk rooms, and we definitely count HMO bedrooms as risk rooms.
Yeah.
And that's because of two things. One, the amount of electronic and electrical stuff that people have these days, from phones and phone chargers. Phone chargers are known to catch fire in the middle of the night, so that's a real risk. They all have these four-way extension blocks. We try and design those out because they're a fire risk, but they're everywhere. So now we need a smoke alarm in every bedroom. We need a smoke alarm on the landings and the hallway, and in each reception room if there are any. And we need a heat alarm in the kitchen.
Got it.
Okay. Now, that's alarms. Now, of course, if you've got a bigger HMO and it goes on to three stories, you've got to put in a panel system, what's called a grade A.
To clarify, you've got three or four unrelated people, but yeah, it's now on three or more levels. You still need a panel.
Yeah.
Got it.
All right. There might be, if you have a fire risk assessment and it's a relatively new installation of a grade D1 system, the fire risk assessor will probably say, yeah, that's fine for its rest of its life. But the council may or may not listen to the fire risk assessor.
Of course. Yeah.
At least if you've got a professional fire risk assessment, you've got something to fight the council with. Although I would say never try and take the council on yourself head on, because you will only self-incriminate. So you really do need... Go on.
In my conversations with you and Des, some of the stuff Des has told me, and it's like, oh my goodness me. But I mean, the council, I mean, me and the council don't get on well anyway, but they are absolute bastards. And that's me saying that, not you, of course.
I couldn't possibly agree. Yeah. But they have, shall we say, they've recruited a new type of people into housing. They call them enforcement officers. And we all know what's happened to parking wardens who became enforcement officers who now can become revenue collection operatives.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's exactly the same. Yeah. And they have recruited some really nasty, horrendously bullying people who are absolutely indoctrinated that landlords are criminals. Yeah. Every last one of us, and I'm a landlord myself, every last one of them they believe is a criminal.
So that's interesting situation. Because I didn't know that on three or more levels you needed the panel at the front door, effectively.
Yeah, yeah, that has actually always been the case. Right back into, I don't know, there's this document which Lacours, which landlords, if you've not read it, you really must, because that is your basic guide to the fire safety that you should be providing in any property, not just HMOs.
Yeah, but specifically for three or four, like in full on, you know, five person, three or more stories. I kind of knew that anyway, but I don't have any of those. All mine are minimos, but I haven't got the fire panel, so I'll be making that call this afternoon.
Okay,
to get an update. But you know, that's why we're here, isn't it? So, so like I said, I'm probably your best and worst customer at All World in Sports. So that's it with fire alarms, smoke alarms, and so on.
Okay,
what about fire doors?
Right. Now, that's a difficult one. Again, this actually comes back to the number of stories rather than or floors rather than number of people. So if it's one or two stories, then actually I just need to make another distinction.
Yeah.
And the distinction is whether it's let, whether the property is let on a single joint and several AST.
Yeah.
Or on individual per room ASTs.
Yeah.
And that may seem a bit of a strange way to change the rules, but it's about a bit of ancient property law. If you let it all on one AST, you're actually what they call demising, giving over the entire property, including the kitchen, including the staircase, including the landings and hallways.
Communal areas, yeah.
So you've given them the whole property. So you as the landlord have less authority over what they do, if you like, less authority and less responsibility. So we'll come back to the bedsit ones in a minute. But if we stick with the joint and several AST type ones or the shared house HMO, then in some circumstances, you only need a fire door on the kitchen. And that must be what's called an FD30S. Which means it's 30 minutes fire resistance. It's got fire-rated hinges. It's got a fire-rated latch. It's got intumescent strips all around the top and both sides. And it's also got those furry little brushes that are called cold smoke seals.
Okay.
Snappy little title.
Yeah.
Not. And it also has to have one of those horrible hydraulic closers.
Yeah.
That everybody hates and everybody then...
They take them off, especially in rooms.
Let's come back to that.
Yeah,
come back to the closers in a minute. So on the other doors, the bedrooms and the lounge, etc., if it's a shared house, single AST, then this book, La Cause, says we can have a, sound, well-constructed, close-fitting door.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you'd think that most old doors might fit that, but they don't. It's really only in houses where you've got a really solid door that you break your knuckles on when you tap it.
Yeah.
And it's usually thicker than normal. It would normally be a 44 mil door rather than a 35. And it doesn't have inset panels.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, most doors don't meet that. Modern internal doors, which we call egg crate, because if you've ever looked inside one, it just looks like a bit of beehive or egg crate, or, you know, there's nothing in them at all.
You could literally run through it and,
yeah, you could run through it and a fire will be through it in minutes.
Yeah.
They have no stopping power at all.
In fact, we use those as kindling.
Yeah. good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, for barbecues.
Yeah. So the reality is that in most cases, you're going to need fire doors.
Yeah.
Okay. And there was a distinction between FD30, which doesn't have the little furry smoke seals, and FD30S, which does.
Mm.
Now, you can get away with putting just the FD30 in a shared house, but then that doesn't give you the flexibility to make it bedsits if you want to and do it on individuals. And the reason for leaving the cold smoke seal off was that the fire alarm was only on the landing.
Yeah.
So we needed a bit of smoke to be able to get over the top of the door to set off the fire alarm.
Yeah.
But because the BS5839 now tells us to put smoke alarms inside the bedroom as well as outside, now you can do the job properly and put in an FD30S.
So, for anybody who's got a HMO, you need FD30S regardless, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm afraid. Absolute bare minimum, bare standard. And as a bare minimum, grade D1 smoke and heat alarms, mains powered and interlinked, although it can be wirelessly.
Yeah, and actually, I need to explain the D1 bit as well.
Yeah.
Because they used to be Ds, and then in 2019, they brought in this distinction between a D1 and a D2.
Okay.
All the old ones became D2. And those are the ones that have got that nasty little PP3 battery in it.
Yeah.
That dies once a year.
Yeah.
Starts the thing beeping in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So a sleepy tenant does the only thing he can do to shut it up, which is goes and takes it off the ceiling.
Yeah.
Never replaces the battery, doesn't tell the landlord, and never puts it back.
Yeah.
And the only time we find out is when the council come round and slap you with a 19 to 29 grand fine.
Yeah.
So we don't want that. So they've introduced D1, which have a built-in full life of the unit battery, so 7 to 10 years.
Yeah.
You can't change it. When they eventually go, it will beep, and then you have to change the whole thing. But you don't have to do this annual messing about changing batteries. Okay. Yeah. So that's why we say D1. And in fact, anybody, because you can add these to your existing network if you like, but if you've only got a couple of the old D2s, change them.
Yeah.
Put a whole new D1 system in, because it's far less maintenance, far less hassle, and far less likely for the tenants to rip the bloody things off the ceiling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's just talk approximate costs on both the interlinked mains alarms, and obviously it's like, well, how many bedrooms? But let's just get some kind of ballpark figures. Plus, let's get some approximate costs on fire doors with the intermittent strips and so on. Just ballpark.
Right. So the smoke alarms, I think, and I've not checked this out recently, but they're about 20-25 quid a pop.
Yeah.
And probably same again for the Sparky to fit in, I'd say. So you're looking about 50 quid a unit, maybe.
Okay.
Okay.
And you need one on every level, on the hallway and landing.
Yeah.
You need one in the kitchen, and you need one in every bedroom.
Yeah, and one in the lounge if you've got one.
Of course, because it's a communal area.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's okay. Basically everywhere except the bed, the bathroom, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's also it's also best practice to stick a smoke alarm up in the loft as well.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Because, I mean, let's just think. Why are we putting these things in? We're putting them in to stop people dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if somebody does die or has a life-changing injury because of fire, guess whose neck is on the block and who stands in front of the judge?
Yeah.
Absolutely. On an aggravated manslaughter charge. It's you, the landlord. Yeah.
I mean, and you know, it's not just life changing for a tenant, but you as a landlord, you know, I live 1,000 miles away from mine, but you're going to prison for that.
Yeah,
you're not just getting fined; you're losing liberty, maybe quite significant amount of liberty as well. And one of the things that bothers me at the moment was a huge push on rent to rent, and then turning rent to rents into HMOs, which I think is fine. It's a stepping stone to get you to where you want to be, but they don't have a clue about any of the fire eggs. They don't even seek mortgage approval. They've just got a large house and they sublet it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really important because these are people's lives, people's well-beings, you know. You kill a person, you're not just killing them, you're killing the entire generation that they would spawn effectively. You're killing, you know, you're killing 100 people, 1,000 people potentially off one person, if you want to see it like that. So that's
pretty weird. But
that's how I see like death and murder and so on. A bit weird. So, well, okay.
Yeah. It's really scary, though, because your standard HMO bedroom will go from perfectly fine. Something occurs. Somebody knocks over a candle. A phone charger overheats. Something like that. Or somebody throws a pair of curling tongs carelessly on the bed. Or a hairdryer overheats. It's 3 minutes or less than 3 minutes before that's an 800 degrees C inferno. And if you're not out in the first minute, you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we've got to do this stuff. And that's why.
Interestingly, people like me, we go, oh, health and safety. Like I live in Spain, right? We don't have health and safety here.
No.
We've got a kids park in Valencia called Gulliver. And it's basically Gulliver from Gulliver's Travels. The side of that, it's 15 feet up and there's 3-year-olds, you know, and there was nothing to stop the 3-year-olds. We just don't do health and safety. And I think health and safety has got quite a bad rap recently, but not recently, in the last 20 years, because we've gone mad, haven't we? Oh, it's all too PC and we've gone mad on health and safety. And so what happens is because of that and those attitudes towards health and safety, people go, oh, I'm not even bothering with it. Oh, it's just a load of rubbish. And it's not. Mm. It's actually really important.
I bang on about it all the time, and people go, oh, "Turtle, shut up!"
Yeah, oh, not no, Phil again.
Just, yeah, I know.
Who set Phil off again?
they say to us in the Facebook groups, "Oh, can't you say something cheerful for once?"
No. What
because
about
because as you said, it's too important, right? Fire door cost.
Fire door cost. Yeah.
Right now, I'm gonna tell a little story first. Because there's two ways of doing fire doors. There's the right way and what people think is the cheaper way. And guess which way the landlords like?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what people think is the cheaper way is to try and fit a new fire door into an old frame.
Yeah.
Well, if you talk to any chippy who does this on a regular basis, they will actually tell you not to piss about and to change the frame as well.
Yeah.
Now, you should change the frame because you need a fire-rated frame. And it's what's called a certified frame and a certified door. And don't buy the ones that don't have the little labels on, because the council will come back in 3 years' time and say, that's not a fire door. And you go, yeah, it is. And they go, where's the proof? There's no label. So you're stuffed and you'll have to change it again. So if you try and put one into an old frame, chances are, first of all, the frame ain't deep enough because it's got a 35 mil rebate and not a 44.
Yeah.
And then it'll be pissed, as we call it in the trade, or out of square to those of you that are polite.
Yeah.
In other words, the Victorians put it in and everything's moved since then. And it probably wasn't even square when they put it in the first place.
Yeah.
And you can't trim fire doors. You must never take any off the top because that's where the label lives and it's not made to be trimmed. You can take a few mils off the bottom, but not many. And you can take a maximum of 2 mils off the side. it ain't going to fit. And by the time the joiner has taken it on and off three times to fettle it and try and make it fit, you've got a dog's breakfast. The gaps won't be all be less than 4 millimeters. And if they're over 4 millimeters, it's a fail. It's so difficult to do. So it's by the time you've accounted for all the labour, the extra 30 quid for a frame is more than offset by getting the chippy to do the job properly.
Yeah.
Okay. So having said all of that, you're probably looking at 300 quid a pop to do fire doors.
Yeah.
There are certified installers out there, and I would love everybody to use them, but they do tend to charge about £1,000 a door.
Okay. There's a big difference, isn't it?
Yeah. Eventually, we're all going to be forced to use certified fire door installers. Yeah. Your average standard chippy doesn't know what he's doing, though. Mm. Yeah. You've got to use somebody that is experienced at doing fire doors, understands how they work, understands how to get the gaps right, understands how to set up these wretched door closers we all hate.
Yeah.
But it's just too important. It's a life safety system. Yeah.
So we've talked about...
It's a complicated bit of technical kit. Doesn't look like it, but it is. No. You know,
it's just a door. Just a door with hinges. Oh. You know, how hard can it be?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No. I think, you know. I'm going to go on now. Hinges, they've got to be CE marked.
Yeah.
And you've got to have three.
Yeah.
Why? Right.
Okay.
Because they've got to withstand 800 degrees C for 30 minutes to keep the fire in the room so that people can get down the stairs and out.
Yeah.
And all right, you might say, yeah, but they'll do that in 5 minutes. They've also got to keep it in so the fire brigade can get in to put the fire out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same reason you've got to have the underside of your stairs fire protected with pink fireboard. That's to allow people to get out, but also to allow the brigade to get in without killing themselves.
So that's interesting, because I was going to then move on to what else do we need.
All right. Okay.
So which is a nice segue. Thank you for that. So on the underneath of the stairs, so this is, if you imagine a house on three levels, and you might even have a basement as well. So like I've got a unit and it's got a basement kitchen, for example. It's a really old house, and the kitchen door is tiny. I don't know who it was built for, but it was like a hobbit's house. But if you were going to convert that to HMOs, obviously you'd have to make the gap bigger for the doorway. But also going up those stairs, up those three flights, you need what underneath the stairs exactly?
Well, if it's already boarded and skinned, it's probably okay.
Okay.
If it's lath and plaster, or if it's got nothing, then you need to put pink fireboard, which is very similar to ordinary plasterboard, but it's got a better fire rating.
Yeah.
And it literally is pink rather than grey.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, you don't actually have to skim that if it's fireboard, but you do have to mastic all the joints and all the edges with what's called intumescent sealant.
Okay.
You get it from Screwfix. It's standard gear now. It used to be difficult to get, but it's everywhere now. But every underside, and that's to protect the staircase itself from failure for 30 minutes during a fire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Amazing.
So... But more often, it's a case that you've got the standard Victorian with the understairs covered. And very often, there's no protection on the underside of the stairs there at all. You can just see the wooden risers and treads. So that's got to be boarded out with this pink fireboard.
Okay, but if it's already plastered, because you bought it like that 20 years ago, you don't have to do anything?
If you're sure it's plasterboard, and you can tell by knocking it, If it's lath and plaster, that's going to fall apart. So we need to board over it. Yeah.
Because some of the older houses had, do you remember that old plastering? It's got wood in it.
Yeah, that's the lath and plaster. Yeah. Those wooden strips are called laths. And the plaster's thrown on with the trowel. Yeah.
So that needs to come off and then be replaced with pink.
You don't have to take it. You don't have to take it off. You can just board over it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. But it definitely needs doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see, again, this is where you've got people who've maybe been left a house and then they're like, well, we don't know what to do with this. Let's HMO it. And that situation is causing risk. Or they go to one of those guaranteed rent companies, which we do marketing for, as it happens.
Yeah.
But the ones we do marketing for are very good, obviously.
Of course.
But there are others out there that just go, oh, just HMO it, just four people, stick a fire extinguisher in there, be fine.
Yeah, we don't do fire extinguishers. We'll come back to that.
Okay. So, and I've had conversations with people, and I'm like, dude, what the hell are you doing? You're going to kill someone. You could have got a prison, you know, if something happens. And obviously, this is all about risk and about lowering risk. And you might get lucky and you might never have an incident. We've never had a fire in 23 years, whatever it is, of owning buy-to-let properties of odd sorts and types. But it's going to happen at some point. We'd never had a cannabis fire until 4 years ago, and we had three in 1 year.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was Brexit. I don't know. Blame Brexit on everything. It's just, it's Brexit. It's raining today. Yeah, bloody Brexit.
I'll just sign this contract. Yeah.
So let's talk about other things then, like fire blankets, fire extinguishers, and then include anything else that is useful, but we might have forgotten, but we've not spoken about from a fire safety point of view.
Okay. So fire blankets are an absolute must. Every kitchen must have a fire blanket, and it needs to be positioned between the cooker and the escape route.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So person mustn't have to go past a chip pan fire or something to get it.
Yeah.
Because we need to keep them safe.
Yeah.
And just for added fun, it has to be mounted at a height of 1.5 meters.
Okay. I need to increase the height on mine because we're about a meter high, I think. We're just like waist level. Okay.
Right. Yeah. I don't know why, but no. It's so that there's enough room to pull the strings to get it out.
Yeah. But what if you're a midget? Like, I don't think you're taking that into account. I've had, your banister's an inch too high. According to who? I'm sure it's fine for me just because you're tall, you know.
We could get onto regulations for banisters another time.
Do you think normal rentals should also have fire blankets?
Yeah, absolutely. Standard. Yeah. Absolutely. Every kitchen. The council will do you if you don't have one, as simple as.
Yeah.
Now, fire extinguishers. I always advise against fire extinguishers in rental property.
Mm.
And there's two schools of thought on this amongst fire risk assessors and indeed in councils. But I will always state when I do a fire risk assessment or any of my team do not supply fire extinguishers. The reason for that, fire extinguishers are intended for use by trained people.
Mm.
Yeah. And you could have a go. You might get it right, but chances are you might get it wrong. And if you use one incorrectly, you can actually cause the fire to blow at you.
Yeah.
We don't want that.
Yeah.
And also, as I just said a few minutes ago, we've got 3 minutes before a room is a blazing inferno. Pissing about with a fire extinguisher is eating into that 3 minutes.
Mm.
This is about saving life. It's not about saving property.
Yeah.
Yeah. And whilst we'd all like to save our property, you know, they can be rebuilt. People can't.
Yeah.
So no fire extinguishers. Also, if you've got fire extinguishers and they're out of date, that's a criminal prosecution or a fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's easier not to have one.
Much easier, yeah. Because this is a good thing. Anything you do provide has got to comply with all the regulations, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
So almost, if you don't have to put it in, don't put it in.
What's the expectancy, life expectancy of a fire extinguisher?
They have to be maintained. Well, some have a five-year. Some of the newer small ones have a five-year. But all the bigger ones, the older ones, they have to be maintained every year.
Yeah.
They have to have a little man come and charge you a fortune to do some magic and put a new sticky label on it that says it's all right for another year.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't even know what they do because I just say take them out.
Yeah.
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 Now, must get on to fire risk assessments in a minute.
Yeah.
But one other thing that's on my mind is consumer units.
Mm.
Okay. Now, if you've got a consumer unit, chances are very high it's one of the old plastic cased ones.
Yeah.
Those are a known fire risk.
Okay.
Now, the innards tend to work loose after years and years and years, and it causes arcing or sparking inside. This happens or can happen in any consumer unit of any type. And it's one of the reasons that the ICRs have come in, actually. But what happens with the plastic one is the plastic is pure fuel. It's an oil derivative. So yep. The thing inside gets hot. Maybe the insulation on the cable inside starts to flame a little. And then the case decides to join in. Well, that's half a pound of good oil-based fuel. So that gets a real inferno going. Wowza. Burning plastic drips off it. And you've got a good old fire going.
Yeah.
Now, this is possibly copable with in a lounge or a kitchen. It's not ideal. But under the stairs or in the hallway, that's in your emergency escape route.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we can't have anything in the emergency escape route that's going to catch fire. We don't even want coats and things hanging in it.
Yeah.
And shoes and all that sort of junk that we normally put in hallways. That's all got to go when it's a fire escape route. So if you've got a plastic encased one, my advice is, even though on your EICR it will write it up as a C3, yeah, which is a recommended to change, from a fire point of view, it's a must change. So if it's under the stairs or if it's in the hallway or the landing, absolutely is a must change.
And so I'd say location or change the unit to one that's more fire retardant?
Yeah, no, change the unit to one that's got a metal case on it.
Okay.
Which is the only ones they will fit now.
Okay.
And it's about a 500 quid job to change it. Yeah. All right. But they won't, the electrician won't insist on it because he doesn't actually have a problem with it catching fire. He's actually saying that it's probably not going to catch fire in the next 5 years.
Yeah. And he's probably right.
The important thing there on fire, because you were rightly saying that stuff doesn't catch fire very often, and thank God it doesn't anymore. Mm-hmm. And the fire statistics show this, that rental property is not the nightmare it used to be, although there are 60% more likelihood of a fire in an HMO than in a buy-to-let.
Oh, okay.
But that's because there's more people, all doing their own thing, all with lots of electronics.
Smoking when they shouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. All that. Yeah, putting condoms over smoke alarms and rubber gloves, all sorts of things we see.
Yeah, yeah.
But the big problem with fire, unlike just about anything else, is the enormity of what happens when there is one. Yeah, because most things, you're right, you've got a bit of damp and mold. It's not great. And although it will actually give somebody cancer over years, it's not good. It's not an instant death thing.
Yeah.
Many of the other things we look at, trip hazards, what have you, that you're going to cause an injury, but not an instant death. Fire, you're almost guaranteed a near instant death or two.
Yeah.
That's why we have to, even though the risk is low, it's because the ultimate outcome, the harm, is so great. That's why we have to take it so seriously.
And also, like with fire, fire doesn't happen often, but then neither does getting hit by a meteorite, and people still die by getting hit by a meteorite.
Yeah.
And crossing a road, I've never been knocked down by crossing a road. That doesn't mean tomorrow that's not going to happen. But it's an insurance policy, and that's what insurance is. You might never need it, and you would hope you never need it. But if you did need it, you're grateful you've got it, like a fire door and like fire alarms and so on.
Yeah.
Although you do need them, but you're much more grateful for fitted a full fire door with the frame and intermittent strip from a person who knows what we're doing than from your local chippy who's kind of got a clue, but not really.
Yeah.
You will be great should it set on fire. So
absolutely right. It's a practical example of Sod's law, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you have the insurance, you don't have the problem. Chances are, but yeah. if you don't have the insurance, if you don't have the fire precautions, then chances are you're doing other stuff that makes it more likely there'll be a fire because you're being a cheapskate and you're not doing stuff properly. Exactly.
That's the only reason I bought insurance, health insurance, because I've not been ill.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Like automatic. Works every time, yeah.
As soon as it runs out, I know I'll get ill. I just know it. Let's talk about Fire risk assessments.
Yeah. Now, if you have a bedsit type HMO, where you're letting the rooms individually, and basically in that situation, the common areas, including the kitchen, the lounge, and whatever, and the stairs, they still belong to you, the landlord. You have, you're in control of those. You have right of access to all of those. And you're 100% responsible for anything that happens in any of those.
Yeah.
So in that situation, those common areas come under another set of law called the Fire Safety Order. And you are legally required to have a fire risk assessment. Most landlords don't know this. Most landlords don't do it. But again, you're prosecutable. And that comes under the fire brigade. Now, they're not as nasty as the council. Everything else comes under the council and the Housing Act and something called HHSRS, the Housing Health and Safety Rating System, which is something else that we inspect for, which covers 29 hazards, which is something for another day. One of those, however, is fire. Now, it doesn't say that you have to have a fire risk assessment. It says that you have to keep the property perfectly safe for the residents. One of the things you have to keep perfectly safe is fire. And I'll say to each and every landlord that's listening to this, you don't know enough about fire to do your own fire risk assessment.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I didn't know that until I went and trained as a fire risk assessor myself, because I thought, if I'm going to run a team of fire risk assessors, I probably ought to know what they have to do. So I took myself off to the fire college and learned what the fire people know.
And I can just see you sat there and your mind is going, what the?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm an inveterate bore on it all now, I know. But it's only because of what I now know that I didn't know. And I'm only sort of, I'm at the lowest level of it. I'm trained to do HMOs, single lets, flats in blocks, that sort of thing. There's no way I'm on the Grenfell level.
Yeah.
I'd have to do another 10 years training to get to that level.
Let's just talk about Grenfell for 1 second.
Because, yeah.
Interestingly, like I got charged for a balcony, £700
that you don't have. Yeah.
I don't have. Right. And it's like, and I've just got another bill for 4 apartments for £7,000. And one of them has got 3 big roof terraces. One of the biggest flats in Leeds, very large roof terraces, no wood, all steel and concrete. And I'm being, you know, £1,700 per flat. Right. So it's £1,700 for that one. No wooden balcony. I did a podcast yesterday, I think it was, about how city centre flat prices are stagnant because people can't sell them because they can't get the certificate.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, so very interesting. I just wanted to mention that because, I wanted to moan about it.
Yeah.
Basically. So anyway, continue, sorry.
That's all a big bag of washing, isn't it? It's a dreadful situation.
We're not even over half of it, you know.
No.
Worse to come.
And the one of the big problems is there are so few people in the country trained to the level of fire specialist to be able to assess those buildings. Yeah. So unless you just go and rip it all off, what can you do? It's big. Actually, funnily enough, before I finish off fire risk assessments, some councils now have started putting in HMO licenses that if you don't have fire doors to the very latest FD30S spec and fire alarms to the latest BS58396 spec, you have to provide a waking watch in an HMO.
Wow.
These council people are not on this planet.
No.
But the thing is, get this, if they write it in your HMO license or even in a selective license, if they write this as a condition, and you don't do it, it's a criminal act not to comply with a license condition. Instant £15,000 fine.
You see, although I agree, that level is ridiculous, I actually don't mind these regulations. Bring more in, because I've been in property for 23 years, and what it does is it stops people going, I'm going to go into property, which is great, because then there's less property, there's more tenants, the rents just shoot up. I mean, just in the last 6 months alone, I reckon rents have gone up 20% in some areas. Leeds City Centre, for example, I was getting 830, it dropped down to 700. They're now going for 950. which is,
yeah,
I don't know,
absolutely, yeah, bonkers. Yeah. And it's going to continue, because the only place that the cost for all this regulation and compliance can go, obviously, is onto the rent. Because where else is it going to go? It's not like, you know, we're not making 50% margin on this stuff like shops make on our Smarties. No. You know, we're making 10%, 6%, you know.
For a fire risk assessment, obviously you guys provide them. Approximate costings, it depends on size and location and that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, it's yes and no. So if we say up to six people in an HMO, then you're probably looking at 400-ish for a fire risk assessment.
Okay.
We do a service which is a combined fire risk assessment and a full HHSRS assessment on all the other stuff that the council can get you for.
Yeah.
And there are not many people, unfortunately, in the country trained to do both things, but I've managed to get a team together that are.
Yeah.
And because that can be done in one visit, the big part is actually getting to site, doing the inspection.
Yeah.
Although there's a few hours back in the office checking everything up and writing it up. Yeah. But we can do that for 600 plus VAT for the two, you know? Yeah. So, and most HMO landlords, I would say, you do need a fresh pair of professional eyes to look at all the compliance of the other stuff. Now, I know we're not covering all that today, but you don't, you know, with the best will in the world, you don't know what the council's looking for.
Yeah.
We've been on their courses. We've been on their enforcement courses. We know how they think. We know what they do. A lot of the people that work for me are ex-council, or some of them are even current council, where they work for me in a different location.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just going back to who needs a fire risk assessment. Even though the law doesn't require to have one in a minimo, I have to say to you, absolutely bonkers if you don't do one.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sat here and I'm like, oh, sugar, there's another 1,200 quid. 600, I mean, for
yeah, I know.
Each one. I'm like, oh. And, you know, with all the other costs you've got.
You've got to do the pair of scales thing.
Yeah.
And on the one side is 600 quid for knowing that you've got it right.
Yeah.
And on the other side is 70 to 100 grand of fines.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the difference between HMOs and buy-to-lets.
Mm.
Buy-to-lets, yeah, there's some risk if you've got selective licensing, but you're looking at a few K, maybe 10K is your maximum exposure.
Yeah.
Your exposure on an HMO, and this is why rent-to-rent, oh, for God's sake, you know, you set up a pound company, but you've got the risk of 100-odd grand's worth of fines. Yep.
And lives.
And your limited company is no protection from the council.
Yeah.
They will go after you personally as well as the company.
So interestingly, I'm a negotiator, always have been, can't help it. I've always been a salesy sort of person. But I would be using the risk assessments, sorry, and the HHSR stuff. I would be using that as a tool to go in and negotiate a cheaper discount. Someone's got a 4-bed, 5-bed house that's being sold as a HMO. I would be paying 600 quid, get you guys in, get my report. I mean, I'd be going back to the seller and going, look at this, mate. Look how much extra cash we're going to have to spend on this. I would be getting that price down.
Yeah, we do that. We do that for buyers quite often. Yeah. And happy to do it, because it's just point, you know, from our point of view, it's just pointing out what needs fixing before it's a safe HMO.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, but I change hats and put my developer hat on, or my landlord hat, and I say, buddy, right. You know, why would I pay you top dollar for something that doesn't meet spec?
Because
I'm gonna have to spend money.
I think we've pretty much covered everything. The only other thing that I think we've probably missed out is electrical installation certificates, and obviously you need vent goes without saying. I think people avoid them because they're worried about what it might chuck up, and then it's another expense, and now they know that there's this expense, whereas before they were ignorant about the expense, so it's fine. But now, oh my gosh, now I've got to spend another, let's say a consumer unit and something else, it's another 1,000 quid or £1,500, whatever. It's much easier for them to be ignorant and go, oh, well, I didn't know. Well,
it is, but if the council catch you without one, it's an instant 30 grand fine.
Exactly, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
Plus,
if it's an HMO, they'll then get you with the management regs for another 30 grand or maybe more. Because the minute they're in, the minute they sniff anything's wrong, This is revenue generation. It's not about safety as far as the councils are concerned. Yeah. If they can get you for damp and mould, for trip hazards, for fire doors, for fire alarms, yay, off to the bank we go.
Yes.
And, you know, yeah, they're desperate. They're absolutely desperate for cash.
Yeah.
Into and we are there. Money. Yeah. And they see us as the soft target. And landlords, they see you, half-decent landlords, trying your best landlords. They're that you're the rich pickings, not the real bad guys, because yeah, it's too much like hard work to go after the real rogues.
Yeah.
You in the middle, the mediocre, the average, the amateur. I hate to use these words, but the people who are not doing it absolutely top dollar project. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Don't get me started on accidental. There's no such thing as accidental.
Okay, yeah, wonderful. Right. Thank you so much for your time today.
It's been a blast.
Yeah, thank you very much. And we'll catch up with you on the next one. Thank you very much.
I'll try and think of something cheerful for the next one.
Shall I? Have a good day. Take care.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Hey, it's Dan here. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate each and every one of you. Please click like or subscribe to the entire podcast.